Welcome to the podcast of Motorweek, television's original automotive magazine. Here's your Motorweek podcast host, John Davis.
Thank you, Alec Webb, our longtime announcer for everything Motorweek. We're in Studio A, and this is podcast number 52 for Motorweek. And around our table with microphones facing them today, our road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
And associate producer, Ben Davis.
Here I am.
Let's see. Kia kicks it up a notch, and we'll then talk about the best minivan you can buy for your money. So let's start off with a car that I think it is surprising everyone, and that's the 2011 Kia Optima, and particularly the Kia Optima Turbo. To put this in some context, Kia is owned by Hyundai. The Kia Optima is basically a Hyundai Sonata, which is a runaway hit, mid-size class car, but with a decidedly sportier body and sportier interior and sportier tuning. And now they're highlighting the Turbo, which is actually there instead of having a six-cylinder for their one level up. And it's a very interesting piece of work. Brian?
Yeah, I would agree. The drastically different feel to it than the Sonata. I think they did a really good job. I'm not sure I would call it a sports sedan. I mean, to me, it wasn't that sporty.
Complete.
But, what? You disagree?
Yeah, I do. But we'll get to me.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, jump in, Ben.
I think they knocked it out of the park,
Ben. Whoa, a real disagreement. Give us some details.
Well, first of all, the styling is absolutely incredible.
Well, we were talking about the handling, sports sedan.
I had a lot of fun with it, but I think that turbo motor must have been driving me, my inspiration. But, yeah, I mean, compared to the Sonata, I thought it handled just a smidge enough better.
It stiffened up a nice amount. I mean, it's I wouldn't want to drive it on really super broken pavement all day long.
You mentioned styling.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, they borrowed – they hired talent that formerly did some VW and Audi work.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, they just nailed it. What a beautiful car.
Yeah,
Ben, I don't think I've ever heard you be that affirmative about a car in a long, long time.
Especially one made in Korea. He's
so
not
maybe
a
your Jeep,
yeah,
but that's
yeah.
about it. All right, Robinson.
Yeah, I actually heard the cliche pulling the gas station. Whoa, what is that car? Is that a Jag? I actually heard
wow.
that one, yeah.
That's incredible high praise for a brand that really most people still see as a maker of compact cars and not particularly good ones.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine back when Honda and Nissan, well, Datsun then, were struggling to get their footing. I imagine it happened overnight for them, too, where all of a sudden, blam, here's a awesome job that we did. And then people from that day forward.
Yeah, we've been seeing, of course, huge improvements in Kia quality for the last few years, especially since Hyundai took them over. But, you had the Soul and other vehicles come along in the last couple of years that have been very, very impressive. But the Optima is so striking looking that I think you're right that, you know, it's one of those things, an overnight success that took years.
Right.
You know, people just notice them.
And I think you're definitely seeing like, as you mentioned, they're owned by Hyundai, and they're trying to make Hyundai more the luxury version and Kia the brand that's more youthful and sporty. And
yeah, more like a Mazda or even somewhat a BMW.
Yeah, so more than anything else they've done at this point, that car certainly does that.
The interior, completely different than a Sonata, which surprised me because I thought there'd be more commonality just because manufacturers usually do that. Did you like it better or not?
I'm not sure I like it better than the Sonata. No, I think the Sonata, to me, interior is a little nicer.
It was laid out more of a more European in the aspect that things were oriented towards the driver. It didn't have the traditional three sections across.
Yeah, and the red backlighting. I mean, it was very Audi-like.
Yeah. It even reminded me of old 3 Series Saab 900 kind of dashes.
But very impressive work, and there will be a Kia Optima hybrid as well, again, using the same drivetrain that's in the Sonata hybrid.
Good things come in threes, they say.
Yeah. Let's move on to 3x2, or 6, because that's how many vehicles we had in our recent minivan shootout that we did along with our friends at USA Today and Cars.com. And we give Cars.com a lot of credit because they've been putting together these drive-offs that we've been allowed to participate in. They're a great group of people from all the publications. And Brian, you've been involved in all of them, the sedan and the utility and now the minivan. Give us an idea before we get into the vehicles how it's actually set up.
Like you say, Cars.com kind of puts it together, and they put out to all manufacturers, hey, we're doing a shootout, basically, and there's usually a price limit set, and send us whatever you want underneath that price, and we kind of compare them all.
It's not all just journalists.
Oh, that's correct. Along with Cars.com and USA Today, we also have a local family. I think they do that through their website. They kind of get a family to come out, and just because, you know, and us in the media, we get a lot of criticism because we have different agendas than people that actually buy cars. So we get someone out there that's actually looking for a minivan and see what they like about them that maybe we don't notice.
Okay, here's the rundown of the six vehicles, and then I'll turn it back to Brian, and he can talk about the results. The Dodge Grand Caravan, which I think went in as something of an underdog because it's the one of the oldest models in this test. The Chrysler Town & Country, ditto. Honda Odyssey, which was redone just in the last year. Toyota Sienna, a little bit older, but still basically new. The Nissan Quest, the newest vehicle in the test. And the Volkswagen Routan, which is basically a caravan Town & Country, but re-engineered by Volkswagen. Having said that, how did it go? Who were the finalists and who won?
Well, you mentioned we did have six. There's only currently seven minivans available. The one that didn't make it was the Kia.
Sedona.
Yes. And they opted out. They didn't want to be part of the comparison. But of those six that made it, three of them, you mentioned, are all based on Chrysler Grand Caravan, Chrysler Town & Country, and, of course, the Volkswagen Routan. And then you have three Japanese entries, the Honda Odyssey, the Nissan Quest, and the Toyota Sienna. I think going into this comparison, if you would have asked me, I would have said the Honda Odyssey was my favorite. And that's what ended up winning. You know, nothing really swayed a lot of us on that. Some surprising things. The Chrysler Town & Country was very, very nice. They did a big improvement between that and the Caravan both. The Routan got the new Chrysler powertrain, the Pentastar V6, but they didn't really do much to the interior to keep it up with the Chrysler Town & Country. It was really nice. And the other surprise was the Toyota Sienna. I fully expected that to vie for the win in this thing, but it rode rough. There was a lot of noise, especially engine noise. It was the only all-wheel drive minivan available right now. So if that's important to you, obviously you should look at it. But just nowhere near the refinement of some of these others.
And so the Odyssey won, which I should point out also is our driver's choice pick for best minivan. Surprise number two was Town & Country. Who was number three?
Number three was the Nissan Quest, which you mentioned is the most recent redesign of any of these. I think they actually sat out a year with their Quest model. They brought it back. Everybody raved about the quietness and comfort to it. And it's still some people weren't sold on the styling, which, a lot of people aren't on the Odyssey either. But it still has a really boxy shape to it, which I kind of like. They didn't try to make it look like a crossover. But as far as the interior, extremely quiet. And it is actually crossover-like on the interior, the way the rear seats fold, the third row. There's no folding the seat backs down and then the bottom up. It's just a one fold seat backs down, just like a crossover. And it works really nice.
The one thing that I do like about the Town & Country and the Grand Caravan a lot is the fold into the floor second row seats. And I just think that is a terrific advantage. Even though it didn't win the overall contest, it is once again the best-selling minivan. But Chrysler, again, new motor, vastly upgraded and much better interior. I just drove the Caravan in the last couple of weeks. Much quieter. They've done a great job. What did the results tell you as to why the Odyssey, however, prevailed?
A big thing was just the comfort of it and the quietness and the smoothness of it, and also the best fuel economy.
I was going to say,
which is,
fuel economy's
certainly
gotta be a big deal.
Important. Yeah. You mentioned the Routan and the Dodge. The Dodge was definitely at a disadvantage as far as we had a price limit as always, but it was pretty high at $42,000. So you could pretty much have every option available, and the Dodge was the cheapest, and they. I wouldn't say it was stripped out, but it was a very, I think it came in at 30, low 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And it still had dual DVD screen, or actually a single DVD and nav for low 30s, but everyone else was extremely optioned out, so they kind of were at a disadvantage.
So, yeah, so it wasn't so much that they weren't as good as, say, the Town and Country. It's just it didn't leave as good a first impression.
Well, the Town and Country interior is vastly upgraded over the Grand Caravan.
Grand Caravan.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's just two different vehicles, but everything from the seats are different. I mean, much more comfortable seats, and all the materials are just a huge upgrade.
Ben, I know you test –
And you love minivans.
Yeah, every van here. And Ben is the most decidedly un-minivan person on our staff. If you had to pick one of these, or if you had to pick features to tell people to look for in a minivan, from your experience, what do you think it would be?
Well, having just used the Odyssey to haul some wheels and tires, I had to lug out the second row seats in storm. And I just... Life's too short to be doing that, especially getting up there in my age. They're not light.
Oh, yeah, your age.
And they're sharp and they get messed up. So I would definitely go with the Dodge or the Chrysler simply for the stow and go. I mean, even when the second row's up, you can still use the cavity that those seats would occupy as just massive storage.
It's huge space in there.
It's a very good point. Okay, let's turn now to our lightning round, where our Motor Week panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions on topics making headlines. We get 2 minutes to talk. And when the 2 minutes is up, we hear Michelle with the bell. Well, that almost rhymes. And here we go. Automakers are embracing social media in a big way. Remember Volkswagen's The Force Super Bowl campaign. Ford just introduced Doug the politically incorrect sock puppet to promote the Focus. Just how important is the social media component? And just for fun, what, if any, of these programs or campaigns do you guys like? And we are filled with silence. Ben, I'll let you make you start.
Sure. As far as social media campaigning, it's definitely important just for the simple fact that a lot of these people, they claim to call this group of people the millennials, born from 1980 to 2000. They just don't watch TV anymore.
They don't read newspapers.
Yeah, and the only way to grab these people, which if they're not driving yet, soon will be, is through social media. And as far as my favorite goes, it was the first one I heard about. It was the Fiesta where they gave 100 European models to 100 tech-savvy, blog-happy people and just let them blog about it. They gave them special missions to do, whether it be kind of like a, I don't know, little race here or a
scavenger hunt.
That's what I was looking for. Yeah. And it was a huge success.
I like the fact that Audi allowed the social media to tell them to bring a car to the Chicago Auto Show, the Audi TTRS, which wasn't going to even make a U.S. debut. But they got they put it out there in cyberspace, and they got such a response that they brought the car. And when we were there during their social media press day, the car was mobbed. So it definitely has an impact. I have to admit that I'm not as attuned to it as I probably should be, but it does seem to be taking over, or at least it has become a major force in advertising.
Yeah, I'm even less attuned to it than you are, but yeah, and it's important for the manufacturers, I think, just because they can go after people that are fans or whatever. They've already established that they love that brand. So, you know, you're not wasting money or efforts, you know, spreading your message to people that don't care. You know this guy loves Fords, so, you know, you can market directly to him.
And at the Chicago Auto Show, Michelle Parker, our publicist, she came up with the idea of, putting out there that we were going to be at the show. And if you wanted to come and get a tour of the auto show with me, you could do it. You could basically send in your request. We'd pick a group, and we had, I guess, about 20 people. We had a wonderful time all day, and I think, and yes, most of them were quite young, but it gave all of us an insight into what the younger audience likes and doesn't like, and the fact that if you do television the right way, they will watch. And I thought it was very encouraging for all of us that basically are not attuned to it to see that there's a whole new market here and it cannot be ignored. And with that,
it's very inexpensive as well.
A very inexpensive way to get to people. Okay, let's move on now to our Motor Week mailbag. Our question comes from Roger. Here we go. When do you know to replace the batteries in a hybrid car? Do you go by years or do you go by mileage? Who would like to tackle Roger's question?
Well, my only answer to Roger would be when they're depleted and they don't work anymore. I don't think there's any type of warning you get, or I don't think there's any recommended replacement. I mean, do you know? I don't know.
No, there isn't. I mean, basically, if you get to a situation where the vehicle is not stopped, you know, automatic start is a factor of most hybrids. If it's not doing that, or if you're not getting the punch from the electric motor either when you start off or in passing, there's probably some warning lights. I really don't know that because I've never seen it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like a service hybrid system.
There's got to be.
We've had those in a Prius.
We have never, ever heard from anybody that has gotten their battery replaced, and you came up with some statistics.
I was on a Toyota event a few years back, and at that time, I'm not sure what the recent numbers are, but they had, over the lifespan of the Prius, they had replaced less than 200 battery packs.
Well, that's almost 20 years.
Yeah, and over two-thirds of those were due to accident damage, not failure. So I think battery replacement's still pretty limited at this point.
If somebody asked you that question, Ben, what do you think you'd tell them?
Well, I've heard stories of taxi cab companies that have hybrids in excess of 300,000 miles.
Wow.
So,
and yet the used market for hybrids is not strong because people are afraid of it.
Right. I mean, it's just a stigma that people will have to get over. But I don't think there's any reason to believe that this battery won't go on for as long as you're tired of driving the car.
Toyota originally said that Prius battery replacement would cost about $1,000 at this point, but it's still, I understand, around $4,000. But the fact that nobody has needed them says that there's not many of them in the pipeline, and that's why they're probably so expensive. So I guess my advice to people is don't worry about it.
Yeah, I heard these batteries aren't worked hard by any means.
Yeah, they seldom get discharged more than about half.
Yeah, they keep them in that like 30% to 70% range,
right.
So they never
Which is why
really
they last.
Yeah, they never get depleted.
Not like your laptop where you're always running it into the ground. Well, that brings to a close our Motor Week podcast number 52. I want to thank very much Brian Robinson and Ben Davis. Also, thanks to our able audio engineer, David Wainwright, our podcast creator, Bill Mixter, and our producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. I'm John Davis. Thanks for listening to our podcast, and we'll see you soon on Motor Week.
You have been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive magazine series, each week on your local PBS station.